But the relationship currency is so important because as you get more senior, people are making decisions behind closed doors that have nothing to do with your deliverable. You, the fact that you're even a subject, that says you're good in terms of what you deliver. Now it's going to be about who knows you in that room to say, oh, Lori, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, we got to give this to her. There's no debate.
And here we go. And this is Inspiring Women. And I am speaking with Carla Harris today, the Carla Harris. Carla, I am so excited to be talking to you to prepare for this discussion. First of all, it's very special to me. I have listened to podcasts. I have read books. I have read talks. I wore my pearls. We're going to talk about the 8 pearls of wisdom for intentional leadership from Carla Harris. On having done all those things, including, by the way, listening to gospel music, which is not my thing, but it is now, I just have to say that your wisdom and your leadership is exceptional. I really am inspired to be speaking with you today. My first question for you, can you remember a time when you were not confident?
Well, I'll tell you, Lori, I can't remember a time that I wasn't confident in my abilities, but I can't remember a time when my confidence got busted.
Okay.
You know, and that was very early on in my career. So I've always approached everything with a can-do attitude because my parents always made me feel like I was supposed to do well, that it was nothing special. I didn't have to make a special investment. You're smart. You're supposed to do well. So what are you talking about? But when I first started out in my career, I certainly had a few people that I worked with that made me question whether or not I was made for this business. And I will tell you, by the time I was 4 years in, my confidence was so busted that if you had said, your name is Carla Harris, I would have said, are you sure? That's just where it was. And I will tell you what my breakthrough was. I happened to call my best friend from home, who I've been friends with since I was 10 years old. And I called her house to talk to her that day about yet another tough thing I was going through. And her mama answered the phone. And I said, hey, Ms. Breaker, how you doing? Is Cheryl home? And she said, no, baby, Cheryl's not home now. And it was silence. And she said, Carla, what's wrong? And I said, I just broke down. And I just went, and she listened. And she said, baby, I got one thing to tell you. Psalm 91 and Psalm 4, click. That's all she said. And I was like, well, what am I supposed to do that? Because you have to understand, I am cradle Catholic from 3 months old. And, you know, most Catholics, with all due respect, they can't sort of spout scripture, this scripture, that. We know the mass, but we're not going to tell you, you know, Psalm 91 or Romans 8:28 and blah, blah, blah. But that was my first introduction into understanding, holding on to the word and using the word for power. So I started reading every morning, every night, Psalm 91, Psalm 4. Didn't know why, other than the reason that Ms. Breaker told me to do it. And I'm an obedient girl. Well, a few months into it, call it a couple months, not even 8 weeks, all of a sudden, I got clarity. And I started saying, why am I questioning whether or not I can do this? Wait, let me look at my truth. I graduated, you know, from high school, summa cum laude. I graduated from Harvard undergrad, magna cum laude. I got a summa and a magna on my thesis. It's in Harvard archives next to JFK's and some other folks. I got a very contested job at Morgan Stanley. You know, I graduated second year honors from Harvard Business School, and I'm questioning whether or not I can do numbers. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, my thesis was, you know, a highly econometric thesis, had to do regression analysis and all of that. And I'm questioning whether or not I could do numbers. Where is that coming from? So I started getting that clarity around my truth and not the distraction of the experience. And I'm using those words for a reason, ladies, your truth versus the distraction that you tend to focus on. And then I remember going to talk to one of the gentlemen that I was always sent to, because the person I was working with, every time I asked them a question, they were like, you don't know that? What did they teach you at Harvard Business School? Mm-hmm. You don't know that? And so, you know, they would always say, go ask Bill, go ask so-and-so. So finally, I went to ask Bill another question on my own this time, and he was livid. He said, do you understand why that person keeps sending you here? I am tired of it. It's because they don't know. They don't know what they're doing. blah, 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 blah. You're too smart for this. And, you know, after I got over the shock, that was my breakthrough. Aha. And the reason why that's an important story is so many young professionals go into their career thinking like I did naively, I'm here, I'm smart, I can work hard, teach me. The problem is sometimes in those early days of your career, you run into somebody who cannot teach you. And so you have to be prepared to teach yourself, to invest in the learning on your own, because you might get that person. Mm-hmm. And the other lesson that I learned was that that person was definitely poisoning the system around me. Oh, she's not this. She's not that. Oh my gosh, she did blah, 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 blah. So when people tell me that there's one person that's confounding them, I say, make that person the outlier. Because everybody else I work with seemed to be having a pretty good experience with me. So I said, if there's one person that's confounding your experience, go out of your way to make sure everybody else that touch, tastes, and feel you think you're the best thing since sliced bread. So when that person gets behind closed doors and they start spewing their negativism about you, the other people can say, oh, really? Mm-hmm. That wasn't my experience. Oh, really? No. So now that person will start stepping back because they're the only one that's had this experience. And then little and I, and then the last thing I'll say about that is, you know, to use a little spirituality, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, but if you're nice, he'll let you see it when he get them. And I saw it.
Carla, you know, for women ascending into leadership, there's still today, and you don't like it, nor do I, but yet there still is so much talk still about the imposter syndrome. You talk all the time about three types of important capital that everyone has available to them: intellectual capital, experience capital, and relationship capital. I really want to talk about that intellectual capital and the mm-hmm. experience capital and what you really think about the imposter syndrome.
Yes. And so thank you so much for that question. And we talked about it a little bit in our prep call that, you know, I get that question almost every time I speak, and it used to drive me nuts, but now I endure it and I understand it, because the imposter syndrome was the hot thing when I was coming out of Harvard Business School. That was 37 years ago this coming summer. How can it be that we're still talking about it? So my conclusion is that my generation did not properly pass on the truths that nobody should ever have the imposter syndrome, because none of us get the job because we're a pretty face, and nobody gets the job because they need women and people of color. They just don't make decisions like that. They gave you the shot because they see that you can make rain. So you should have one objective when you're walking into your organization every day, and that is go make rain. They see it. Nobody gets the job with one interview. So you can't say that they were wrong. They just didn't see it. 13 people, because it takes easily 13 people to get the kind of jobs that we all have in this room. Easily interviews from the first one to your offer. 13 people made a mistake. 12 people. 8 people made a mistake. That's impossible, mm-hmm. right? So you have what it takes to excel. So going back to where we started this conversation, focus on your truth. Not the distraction of how hard this feels, not the fact that you gave away your power and let somebody make you question, like I did, whether or not you could do the job, mm-hmm. right? Focus on your truth. You have what it takes. Now the question becomes, do you want to do it? Right? Because let's face it, so many people come out of graduate school and undergrad because I got to get a job, or the consulting job everybody wants, I need to go for it too, or investment banking job, I need to go. And you never stop to really ask yourself what it is you really want to do. And I will admit, that's a hard question.
Yeah.
Especially if your parents have slaved for you to go to college or graduate school, you can't say, I don't know. Right? You don't want to say, I don't know. So most people say, I'm going to law school. No, I'm just kidding. But, but let's face it. If you tell people you're going to law school, they get off your back. You know, your parents are like, you're going to law school. And you sort of say, well, I can make a living for myself. And right. But you don't stop to say what it. So the question is always, do you want to do it? Mm-hmm. Right? Not whether or not you can do it. So you should not ever, ever have the imposter syndrome. And let's talk about the intellectual capital. Mm-hmm. If you got to the seat where you can even interview for the job, you've already gotten the prerequisites mm-hmm. of what you need. Let's talk about experiential capital. When you're doing something from a lateral perspective, you know, the only reason they're talking to you is that they perceive that between your intellectual capital and what you've already done, that you have what it takes in order to prosecute that particular job.
You also said, though, that one thing that really stuck with me is that, and then there's all those other people that didn't get the job.
That's right.
You got the job.
That's
right. That, to me, just crystallizes the ability to remember whatever the doubt is that you might have, all those other people who wanted that chair,
right,
the privilege of leadership that you sit in, and the opportunity to actually use it. I think that is just one of the excellent ways to categorize that.
You are so right, Lori, that is a truth to remind yourself of. So if that imposter syndrome is creeping up, go back to your truths. Mm-hmm. I got the job over all these other candidates, right? I've already gotten some things in my tool chest that made me even a good candidate for the role, right? So there's so many things. I've done things for the first time. So a lot of people think, oh, it's the imposter syndrome because they haven't done that thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but don't discount all of your other experience and how it has prepared you for this. I made that mistake a few times over the course of my career when I was doing something completely new. I gave other people who had experience in that place more credit than I had. Even with motherhood, as Lori knows, you know, I came to motherhood much later than most people. I have an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old. No comments, please. Right. And I remember with my first one, you know, I was like, I really want to be a great mother. You know, I haven't done this before. I'm a new mother, even though I'm a seasoned mother. And so I was taking everybody's advice and feeling like I wasn't quite doing it. Well, somewhere around 8 or 9 months, I was like, what are you doing? Why are you taking all these other people's advice? Everyone, great mothers will tell you, you figure it out as you go, right? There's some basic things like changing the diaper, right? That you probably want to know how to do. But you are a very experienced professional. You've learned a lot of things for the first time. That is your truth. You are a quick learner. That is your truth. You know how to figure out things. And oh, by the way, you have a track record. You're Carla Harris of doing things the way you want to do them. You didn't get to the top of Wall Street in the normal way. You did it your way. So it was a different experience when you got that title of managing director. Mm-hmm. So mama, be a mama, be in tune with your child. That's the one thing about young children. They'll tell you what they need. You know, they're wet, they're going to cry. They're hungry, they're going to cry. They want to cuddle, they're going to cry. So you don't necessarily know which reason they're crying, but you know basically how to respond. Trust yourself. And from that day to this one, it's been about my experience with that kid and not various and sundry other, but I discounted, gave away my power simply because I hadn't done it before. That is a form of imposter syndrome as well. Don't do it. I went through 8 or 9 tough months not trying to figure it out. And by the time she was 7 months, I was starting to figure out I wanted a do-over. I was like, okay, I want to do it. So I got a second one.
Well, Carla, I want to go to the third type of capital that you also talk about. And this is where I think there's just true power and power, whether you're giving it away or understanding how to use it, that's relationship capital. And we know in sort of the environments of professional women that relationship capital is extremely valuable. So I would wonder if you could just talk about it and also talk about how to deploy it and why that's so important.
Absolutely. So there's two pieces to that. The relationship currency is extremely important as you get more senior. This is the room of seasoned women. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that it's not about your performance currency, which is what you are delivering every day. That's what I talk about in Strategize to Win, the difference between performance currency and relationship currency. But the relationship currency is so important because as you get more senior, people are making decisions behind closed doors that have nothing to do with your deliverable. The fact that you're even a subject that says you're good in terms of what you deliver. Now it's going to be about who knows you in that room to say, oh, Lori, absolutely. Yeah, we got to give this to her. There's no debate. You know, yeah, Dangle, you know, she's our most creative person. If she can't figure it out, it can't be done. There are never any numbers with those conversations. They're all subjective, which are a function of the relationships that people have with you. And where I see senior women making mistakes is that they continue to invest in the performance currency. Mm-hmm. Well, over time, performance currency has diminishing marginal returns. You can't get any more value with that. You cannot invest more with that and get more credit. Mm-hmm. It's going to be about the way you can convince Jim or the rapport you have with Tom, right? And I'm using male names because that's usually who's in the room, right? And if it's a woman, the same thing. You got to build that relationship with her. And sometimes it gets even more difficult, we're going to call a thing a thing, to build those supportive relationships with senior women, right? But you got to be that girl, because if you don't have that relationship capital, you will either get passed over or you will not realize your true value if you get the seat, right? Because you don't have the relationships to ask the question mm-hmm. in the room. So the relationships are critical, especially as you're more senior. They're critical as you're going up the ladder, mm-hmm. but I'm going to tell you that it's 80 and 90% relationships when you get to senior, not and 10 or 20% on the performance. Now let's talk about using your currency. Ugh, I can't tell you how many times as a young pup in this business that I saw senior women not realize their full value and their full power. Because as you said, we were talking out there, the relationship piece is about power. Mm-hmm. You can't get in that room, ladies, and not use your voice. You can't get in that room and say, oh, I just got in the room. I don't want to say anything because, you know, I just got mm-hmm. in the room. I don't want them to put me out, or I don't want them to look at me funny, or I don't want them to say blah, blah, right? If you don't use your voice, it goes back to what your mother said. What you don't use, you lose. And I have seen women who got to the top basically dethroned because they were not perceived by the powers to be and powers that be to really bring value because mm-hmm. they sat in those rooms and they didn't say anything, right? And you can't be in the room and know that you need to support another woman and say to yourself, well, I don't want to speak up for Janine because I don't want them to say that I'm supporting her just because she's a woman. Or I don't want them to say I'm supporting, is it Jamie? I don't want them to say I'm supporting Jamie because she's a woman of color. No woman in this room would support anybody, a male or a female, that you didn't think was ready or worthy of your support. You would never do it. So don't convince yourself that others may think that perhaps, you see these words? Mm-hmm. Think, perhaps. You don't know what anybody else is thinking unless you are clairvoyant, mm-hmm. right? And so don't create this narrative in your mind as to why you can't lend your support to another woman or a person of color. Suppose I tell you, you were brought in that room because you're a woman, right? We all like to think, oh, I want to be thought of as, you know, a really great professional. I don't want to be thought of as the woman professional or the woman director, or I don't want to be thought of as the director of color or the professional, you know, that's of color. I ask you, what do you think they see when they look at you? So why would you run away from that?
Yeah.
If you brought me into that room because you think I have a certain perspective, that's called leverage. That's called leverage. So I'm going to use it, right? I'm going to use it till I can buy myself some leverage on some other things.
Sometimes you also have to buy yourself time. I mean, when you're in those new positions and the further up you go, there's also less experience you might have and people to look to. And so one of the other things that is just so valuable when you become more senior is to leverage that relationship capital, because you want to be confident. You want to be confident in what you're saying in the boardroom, whatever. So reaching out to your network and using that relationship Absolutely. Capital from somebody that you trust or even don't know who's been in that position before you to help you is so valuable.
Absolutely. Every CEO I know mm-hmm. reaches out to other CEOs when they get the CEO job, right? Even if they're not in their industry, to understand how they manage right. crises. Do you have a crisis consultant, not just your communications consultant? You know, how did you all think about this? How did you do that? Every CEO I know reaches out to other CEOs, right? And when they know they're on the path to becoming the CEO, some really good board directors start introducing them to other CEOs before it happens so they can have a ready-made network. So you're right. The relationship capital is important when you're in the room to exercise your power. It's important when you go in the room to get allies. So Jim, I'm going to be talking about Priya and I'm going to bring Priya's name up. I need your backing. You got me? Because remember, I helped you with Sam. I need you to help me with Priya. That's relationships, yep. right? And also to get the advice and the knowledge that you need in order to prosecute the job. So never, ever, ever any reason for the imposter syndrome, ever. And wait, one last thing I'm going to say about this.
Wait.
We could talk forever. Yeah, we could talk forever, Lori. But let me just say one of the most important things that you can do as a senior woman is to affirm other women. when somebody comes into your office and they're melting down or they're crying or they have an issue or blah, 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 blah. One of the things I learned to do when somebody came to me to say that, I'd let them cry. I say, you know, girl, here's some tissue. And when they finish, I say, now, let me tell you, good nose. You're right. Exactly what you think is going on is going on. Good nose. And the reason why I said it's so important to affirm other women is because so often we suffer in silence. And when you finally combust and you got to say something to somebody, you still feel like you're the only one that that's happening to, right? So the most important thing you can do is say, no, girl, you're not the only one. I've seen this before. Nice job. You diagnosed it. Because so often you are alone mm-hmm. in those seats and you got to be able to trust your own voice. You got to be able to trust your ability to diagnose an issue. So when somebody that you believe in and respect says, you got it right, now you're feeling like, okay, all right, so I can see this thing, right? And then now you give them a solution. So, and the same thing with your daughters, affirm them. Because there's so many things that are going on in our world now that tear women down and make them question themselves. Affirm their risk-taking. Affirm their mistakes. And affirm when they get it right. Okay, I'll hush.
No, you won't. So as we close out on this Inspiring Women conversation, Carla, I wanted to ask you one last question. You have said that there is no question that you do not have a prescriptive answer for. And so here goes. So Inspiring Women is all about inspiring women as they ascend to leadership, but then once there to keep them there. And we know during the pandemic that we've seen the alarming trend of just another generation move forward in terms of when we get to gender equity, but we're seeing a trend of senior level executive women stepping downshifting or out of the workforce mm-hmm. altogether. One of your pearls is about using your voice. And I wondered if you could just close us out with that level of inspiration to keep women in the game. Now is our time. What do you have to say about that?
Okay, so here's the thing. Every woman that is sitting in a position of power and leadership now has the opportunity to impact, infect, and prepare the next generation. Don't blow it. Don't be so focused again on the performance that you're not investing in the relationship currency, not just on your own behalf, but on behalf of the next generation of women. You may have earned your right at this point, 30 years in it, 35 years in it, 40 years in it, to sit down. So I'm not gonna tell you, hang in there if you're tired, girl, because fatigue mm-hmm. and fear are two things that hold women back. Mm-hmm. In the senior ranks is fatigue. They've been tired of fighting for 20 years and they're ready to stop. And in the early stages, it's fear. But those of you who are tired, who just may not want to go that next rung, then make sure that there's some women that are prepared. I remember, Lori, I looked a few years ago, there were 7 Black CEOs of major corporations. And I thought to myself, are we going to go back when they leave the seat? Right?
Yep.
And only a couple were in a position, frankly, to make sure that somebody else that looked like them could ascend to the seat. So I say to all the women CEOs that are in the room, and I say to all the women directors that are in the room, if you're a CEO, have you prepared the bench? Are you giving your board a real choice when it's time to succeed you? And are you investing in the right talent across the board mm-hmm. and investing enough? So make sure that you can do that. If you're a board director, you can't sit in that seat when they say, we're looking for some other directors and not putting their names in the hat.
Yep.
Right? They may not take your names, but don't be without a few names that you can put in the hat and make sure that you're prepared, especially with some women and or some people of color, because we're in 2024 and people still say they can't find any.
Yeah.
Right? And you can't be a woman that's sitting in a seat right now and you don't know some other women that aren't prepared or that aren't ready. So at least have something. There's one lady, and I won't say her name, but she is so intentional as she's now approaching the age of, you know, aging off of boards. She's been very intentional about replacing herself on all the boards that she's been on. And in most cases, she's replaced herself with herself. With somebody who looks like her.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because
mm-hmm. there's a lot of qualified women out mm-hmm. there. You can't let this, we can't find any, continue. And if they don't choose them, that's okay for now. But you still got some time on that board and say, okay, last 2 folks we brought on were men. Now what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going? Now you got leverage to ask the question.
Carla, you are true to your word. That is unbelievable closing advice. This has been such an amazing time with Carla Harris on this Inspiring Women conversation.
Thank you,
Carla,
Lori.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori. You were great.
Thank you. This has been an episode of Inspiring Women with Lori McGraw. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We are produced by Kate Cruz at Executive Podcast Solutions. More episodes can be found on inspiringwomen.show. I am Lori McGraw, and thank you for listening.